produce guys, Dan and Guido, up next.
Far out. What do you want from life?
I'm Chiquita Banana, and I've come to say
vegetables are very good for you.
Mom was right. Eating veggies keeps us healthy.
Today's Produce Pear Radio Show is brought to you by the Pear Bureau Northwest, growers of delicious, nutritious, sweet, and juicy fresh pears. Look for the USA sticker on the fruit, and you'll know that you have a genuine pear from the Northwest. Stick around. The Produce Pear, right after this.
I'll bring you apples, peaches, bananas, and pears.
From the San Francisco Bay, it's the Produce Pear, your food show on the enjoyment of fresh fruits and vegetables. What's in season? What's fresh? At the store, at the farmer's market, in your backyard, and on your table. Speaking of fresh, here's your host, America's natural grocer, Dan the Produce Man, and Guido the Gardener.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Produce Pear on this fine, fine, lovely April day. I'm Dan the Produce Man, along with
Guido the Gardener.
And we've got a good show lined up for you today.
A great show. We got a fantastic guest, and we got a table full of goodies. And
yes, that's right. Roy Queekmore joins us today. And Roy is a chef, and he's done many, many things when it comes to cooking. Where I met Roy was from the magazine that we both write for, Alameda Magazine. Editor of the magazine paired us up a few years ago now to write articles. I would write about produce, and then Roy would tell you how to cook it. And then we kind of variated. Roy wanted to write a little bit about some meat dishes as well. And so we do that sometimes, kind of like driving down the road, and then one person goes in one direction and then another direction, and you come back and meet after the fork. But we've been doing some interesting things together, and I've learned some really good recipes from that venture as well. Roy, welcome to the Produce Pair.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you around. Jeez.
I enjoyed the last show I was on. I appreciate you inviting me back. Thank you.
Sure.
Now, you're a chef teacher as well.
That's correct. I taught at Tante Marie's Cooking School for a year or two. Probably enjoyed that more than most of the things I've tried in cooking outside of cooking for people. One of the greatest things about being a chef is you get instant gratification. You cook food for people, you see right away the look on their face when they taste it. And that's one of the things I really like about the occupation, is seeing people appreciate what you fix and enjoy what you fix for them and just give you that, I like it, smile ear to ear.
Well, I hope that happens with me, because at 1 o'clock this afternoon, from 1 to 3, I'm giving cooking demonstration and produce things. And geez, I hope when I bang out my green garlic and dandelion greens, people go, oh, you know, the eyes get big instead of.
Well, just hope they don't give you that's a very interesting taste, okay. Because that usually means okay, try again.
Yeah, or either that, or they walk up, they taste it, and they go, now that's a dish.
Yeah, now that's a dish. Okay.
Well, the other one to get you is that has a really unique flavor.
Unique flavor. Okay, so if I get either one of those two, I might as well just pack it in and go home.
What really is good when you cook is when there's silence. And all you can see is people eating, and there's no talking. Then you know they are really enjoying it. You know?
That makes sense to me. Absolutely.
Geez, I like that. You mentioned Tante Marie. Now, where is that?
Tante Marie is just a couple of blocks from here. It's on Francisco Street, down from the corner of Stockton. It's a very small classic French cooking school owned by Mary Risley. And if you want to learn how to cook, that's the place to go. They don't do a lot of teaching on how to run a restaurant. They don't do a lot of teaching on how to manage a business. They don't tell you how to fix food for 500 people at once. You get to cook every day. When you go to school there, you'll go to school to learn how to cook. When you finish, you'll know how to do that in a classic French manner.
Right. Man,
there you go, Dan. See, Dan's got, well, you know, Dan, if I can speak for you for half a minute.
Okay, let's see if you can do that.
Okay. Wants to have a produce store again, and wants to go to cooking school.
Very good.
Well, so, you know, they go hand in hand.
Yeah,
you know.
It is. Tante Marie's is where you should go. 10 to 4 every day for 6 months, and you'll cook every single day.
Boy, oh boy, 10 to 4 every day. I'd have to give up my day job. You know, that's good, though. We have another good friend that teaches there as well, Carlo Midioni. We hope he's feeling better these days. He teaches the food of Southern Italy and other programs there at Tante Marie's. So, and then there's a lot of other great
chefs. Yeah, he's one of our guest lecturers. Well. He's come in and taught on a guest basis because we bring in guest lecturers and teachers from all over the country. Nick Malgieri, who's published probably 10 or 12 books on baking, is one of the better ones. He comes from Peter Gump in New York, and he comes at least once every semester and does a class on baking, and it's just phenomenal.
Now, baking, I mean, that's one that you really got to... You know, you got to watch yourself with. You got to be precise with when it comes to baking.
Hey, last week, pat myself on the back, I baked banana bread, and it actually tasted pretty good.
Did it taste like bananas?
Yeah, but I didn't mix in all the dry stuff really, really well, so I had...
Lumps
a little,
of flour.
Just, yeah, he laughs. Yeah, I know. Okay, well...
All right, so our bottom clock isn't working. I hear the music. I guess it's time to go out for a break. But Ken's shaking his head. He's going to fix that. This is the Produce Pair Radio Show. I'm Dan, the produce man.
I'm Guido the gardener.
Roy Creekmore is our guest. We'll be back right after this fine music and these fine advertisements.
Hello, this is Graham Kerr with some fruit and vegetable news you can really enjoy.
Gathering rhubarb from field and from hill.
Okay.
Yep.
Every time I hear that, it reminds me of the Monty Python guys sitting on those horses clanking the coconut shells together. I don't know why.
I love that one. And rhubarb goes well with the three baskets of strawberries we got here.
Yes, they do, actually. You're right. And rhubarb season officially starts next month, but, you know, there's plenty of it out there right now. We have strawberries on the table here. These are Seascape strawberries from Lucero Farms, grown in Lodi, California. You wouldn't think of strawberries when you think of Lodi. You would think more Watsonville and the coast, but there's a lot of inland strawberries that growers plant. These are organically grown. They're Seascapes, like I said. They're a little more on the I was going to say green side, less ripe side. But, you know, they do have full color all the way around, right underneath the calyx, and they have nice long stems on them. If you can find these at a farmer's market or even at a store, these are great for dipping in chocolate, especially if you have kids and you want to give them strawberries dipped in chocolate because they're not too big. They just make the perfect little snack. Roy Creekmore is our guest here on the Produce Pair. I'm Dan, the produce man.
And I am Guido, the gardener.
So, Roy, what have you been cooking lately?
One of the things that I just did for the magazine was a strawberry mousse cake. And
yes,
this would be a very good strawberry for a strawberry mousse cake because it has a lot of flavor. When you make a strawberry mousse cake, sometimes if you have strawberries that are huge, use those for the decoration on the top. But you really need a flavorful strawberry to make the mousse with so that you get the nice flavor out of that. These would be wonderful to put in a strawberry mousse cake.
Yeah, Seascape is a nice has a very nice flavor and a nice texture as well. I really like the texture of the Seascape berry. It's not crunchy, you know what I mean? It's just nice and soft. All right, so the mousse cake, mousse consists of what?
Does it have little antlers on it or something? Is that what makes it a mousse cake?
That would be big antlers, Guido, if it was a mousse.
That's right. Okay. This strawberry mousse cake is something that's very easy to make. It sounds intimidating, but it's not. You merely cook the strawberries with a little bit of sugar until you get a nice syrupy consistency, and then you put it into a blender, and you put a little bit of flavoring in it, like vanilla if you'd like, or you can put some kirsch in it, which I like to put in it,
yes.
A little bit of lemon juice.
Kirsch sure. is a cherry-flavored liqueur. Okay.
Right.
And then you blend it all up really nice, and you cool it. Then you whip the cream, really nice whipping cream. You blend them together, and you put a little bit of gelatin in it, which you have to soften first in water. And then you let the whole thing cool and begin to set, and then you pour it into a mold of ladyfingers in a springform pan, set it up, and you're done.
That's it?
That's it.
You know, that's very simple, Roy. It sounds really easy. I always thought mousse was very all kinds of different ingredients, and I thought eggs was in there. So it's very relieved to hear that there are no eggs in the mousse.
It's not a non-fat dessert because it does have a lot of whipping cream in it, eggs.
Yeah, but we'll forget that one. What's the chance of, like, getting that recipe on producepair.com?
Oh, I'd love to put that on there for you. Okay. It's also going to be in the edition of Alameda Magazine that comes out in the summertime.
Okay.
With a nice picture, too.
As that magazine hits the newsstands, I like to give it a few weeks and then post the articles on the website because we want people to buy
the magazine.
That's right.
So the more magazines that sell, the better chance you two guys have of getting a raise.
Yeah, there
okay,
you go.
Okay, hey, I'm in. Hey, that's fine.
Absolutely. So by summer we'll have that on, but I'm sure Roy can send you a advanced insider copy.
Because really, we do get a lot of local strawberries here in the Bay Area, but also up in in the Northwest, they have local growers up there that grow fantastic local strawberries. Hey, could you do that same thing with like a blueberries?
You could. You'd have to make sure you cooked it to get the right consistency, but yes, you can. Yeah. And you have to make sure when you blend it up that it looks eye appeal.
Okay.
Blueberries have a tendency when you put them in a mousse to turn a kind of a gray an off blue, which is not real pretty. Strawberries in, you get a nice pink color, and it looks appealing to the eye.
So if you're not going to use a strawberry, maybe even like a raspberry?
Raspberries have too much liquid in them.
No kidding. Okay.
You got to have something that has a little bit of texture.
Raspberries or blackberries will break down.
Roy, look it. I'm just going to do what you do, and then I'll get what you get. Okay.
Well, not only that, the raspberry seeds are a lot harder than strawberry seeds.
You have to
strain
them.
So when you bite on them, they really can hurt your teeth.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Now I'm just, when it comes to food, my brain just goes off the beaten track.
I'm also a gardener. I grew up home in Virginia. I grew up on a farm. So I have a garden of my own. And one of the little tricks I learned here recently about rhubarb, I'd love to share with you.
Oh, great.
Oh, great.
On the other side of this break, boy, I'd love to hear that one.
In fact, rhubarb, that's the article coming out in May. And your recipe is what?
I don't have one for rhubarb.
No, I know, but you have a different recipe.
Yeah, it's for chicken I named after my granddaughter.
Okay.
Chicken Sophia.
There we go.
All right.
We can talk about that, too. This is the Produce Pair Radio Show. I'm Dan, the Produce Man.
And I'm Guido, the Gardener.
Roy Creekmore is our guest. Don't go away. We'll be back right after this.
Mangoes, papaya, chess, nuts from the fire. The food is so good, you will want to stay.
Oh, yes, the food is good. You do want to stay right here on the Produce Pair. I'm Dan, the Produce Man, along with
Guido, the Gardener.
And Chef Roy Creek. Why do I say that? Chef Roy Creekmore.
Creekmore, is that the... I'm the Italian more, he's the Greek more?
No, Creek.
Creek. Yeah, that's Creek. What I know. I know.
Creek.
I've had lots of opportunities in the past for people to misuse my name. I had one lady, she said, well, Mr. Moore. And I said, no, my first name is not Creek. She had written down first name Creek, last name Moore. But no, it's Creek Moore. It's an old English name.
Well, speaking of English, we heard a rhubarb song earlier. And you have a rhubarb tip for growing rhubarb. Yeah. Now, quickly, though, as a little boy in Vermont...
Do I have to listen to this one again?
I'm telling Roy this
time. I'm taking my headphones off.
Now, rhubarb used to grow wild all over the place when I was a kid running around the fields of Vermont. And we'd pick it and eat it all the time, just like that. Of course, we didn't eat the leaves.
Right.
And we didn't eat the basil end, but we ate the rhubarb part itself. It's absolutely delicious. These were big, thick, meaty stalks. Now, you've got a way of growing thinner stalks. Is that what you said?
Well,
or long stalks?
Yeah, one of the things that I learned was if you let rhubarb grow, you get... what rhubarb wants to do. And it'll grow short stalks, it'll grow medium, it'll grow long, and it'll bush out and go everywhere. If you want to train it so that you get all long stalks, one of the things you do when the plant is about 6 inches tall is take a cardboard box, preferably a thin cardboard box if you're an organic gardener, so you can just let the cardboard box disintegrate into the soil. But you take both ends of it out and you set it around the plant. The plant will try to grow out of the box. Tall as the box is how long the stalks will grow. And I've had them grow as long as 36 to 40 inches, where trying to get the leaves out of the top of the box. And then when you harvest it, you take the box and cut it up in little pieces, put it into the soil, and you've got these nice long rhubarb stalks with flowers and leaves at the end as opposed to all along the stalk.
Well,
so
look at that.
You train it up instead of out.
That's correct.
Wow.
I'm planting rhubarb today.
There you go. You plant enough for me.
Okay, I certainly will. I know you love it, Guido. No, I like it just like that, but these berries are something really good
Absolutely. Strawberry and rhubarb pie is one of the best things you can make. When you mix the two of them together, they enhance each other's flavor, and the colors are the same, and you get a pie that's just incredible, just incredible.
In June, which is right around the corner, is National Strawberry Rhubarb Pie Month. So remember that, folks.
All right. You guys are convincing me.
Yeah. I mean, you haven't had strawberry rhubarb pie before?
Not that I really remember.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't. I mean, where? That's Marie Callender's or somewhere, I guess, if I go.
Okay.
My grandmother used to make them for me.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Is, you know, I get how much rhubarb grows in Italy? That's, you know, from my grandmother to
well,
my mom.
You're in California, buddy.
Yeah, I know.
This isn't Italy. Okay, fava beans is another thing that's in season right now.
Now you're talking up my alley.
Yeah, I know. That's, Guido loves them. And I like them when they're freshly picked early, when the beans are really small
right. In
the pods. That's how I enjoy fava beans. Bigger they get, to me, they seem to be more bitter. Of course, you got to peel the shell, then peel the other shell off of them. There's a little plastic shell around them inside of styrofoam. What do I mean by that? All right. People are wondering. All right. We're going to talk more about fava beans when we come back. But first of all, when you open up a fava bean, there is this foam in there. It's like new stereo packaging that's the beans sit in just comfortably in these little pouches. And then around the bean is another little shell. You peel that shell off and you've got a nice bean.
It's more like a thinner skin.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Thin
and,
skin. All right.
Which is edible. And I usually, if I'm eating them raw fava beans, I'll just kind of eat those. And even if I'm cooking them a real quick saute, I don't bother taking that skin off. But we can talk about that on the other side of this break.
Okay. You got to circumcise your fava beans.
I beg your pardon. Ouch.
All right. Roy has a great fava bean story for us and some recipes when we come back from this break. www.producepair.com is where you'll find us on the net. Don't go away.
Now back to the produce pair.
She cooking catfish. She cooking collard greens. She cooking up a mess of loving, make a man jump up and scream. You ought to see my baby when she's stirring up a big old pot of beans. She knows how to get me going with her catfish and collard greens.
Welcome back to the Produce Pair on this fine, fine, lovely day. I hope everybody's out shopping early for your fresh fruits and vegetables. You're on your way to the store. You got us in your car. So turn us up loud and we'll talk to you about fresh produce. Or you're on your way to the farmer's market. There's plenty of them everywhere. We hope you get out and get yourself some fresh fruits and vegetables. 5 to 9 servings a day is what you want. And you want to mix your colors, too. You want different colors for different phytochemicals and different vitamin content to help you get through your day, every day. I'm Dan the Produce Man.
And I'm Guido the Gardener.
And Roy Creekmore is here with us. He is a chef, a teacher, and all kinds of, and a gardener.
And a writer.
Hey, you know.
Yeah, look at that.
A lot of things.
And we're in good company this morning.
And we were talking about fava beans before we broke. You were talking about some of the, during the break, Roy, you were telling us about some of the fava beans that you grew in your garden. Here they are.
I grow an organic garden every year. And last fall, I planted fava beans about late August, early September. And they immediately shot up out of the ground and put this very tall single stalk with lots of leaves and flowers on it. And I thought they were going to all die in the winter. They lasted through the winter. And then in late winter, early spring, the rains and the sunshine, they bloomed. And I picked a huge crop of fava beans. One thing when you grow fava beans, they grow to be maybe 3 to 3.5 feet tall on a single stalk, and the bean pods are about 8 to 10 inches long. So you have to stake them, you have to put a trellis up, or in my case, I put up tomato cages, and they just hung all over the tomato cages, and it worked out really great.
Wow, good idea. Now, do you ever eat the leaves?
No, I have not eaten the leaves. I didn't realize that was an edible part of the bean. I did do, like you suggested, when you pick them very young and very small, all you need to do is get rid of that leathery hull around the bean itself. And in Rome, it's a kind of a springtime favorite ritual. They take them and they just simply put the beans on the table after they've gotten down to the very dark green inner bean, put them in a little olive oil, salt, and pepper, and eat them with a glass of really good white Pinot Grigio.
Hey, there you go.
Look at that.
And that's a kind of, okay, it's springtime now. I know spring is here. If you wait until the beans get larger, like you said, and you think they're bitter, then they're very good to make a pesto with, or you can make a dip with them. Put
pesto.
Parmesan cheese, put some salt and pepper, and a little bit of olive oil in to put them in a blender. And you can, depending on how much olive oil you put in them, get a pesto consistency, or if you put less olive oil, you get a nice bean puree, but you can put on toast a little bit of garlic in it. It's outstanding.
Oh, man. There you go, folks.
Jeez.
There's some great uses for those fava beans.
I'm going to have to remember those. And because I'm not kidding. both my grandparents grew fava beans. And the only way we ate fava beans was either straight, you know, we'd go out there and pick them and eat them out in the garden. Or, and rarely did we eat them fresh. As, you know, saute them sometimes. But most of the fava beans that my grandparents grew ended up being dried and thrown into minestrone all winter long. They would usually dry them all.
One of the best ways you can eat fava beans, regardless of whether they're the small young ones or the really heavy or larger ones, is to put them in a little bit of olive oil or butter, depending on your preference. If you're true Italian, it's olive oil. If you're Northern Italian, it might be butter. And then put corn, cut it right off the cob, and chop up a red pepper, and saute that all together. It is incredible, the flavors that mix together. Not only that, but when you put it on the table with the yellow, the green, and the bright red, it's very attractive.
Red bells, corn, fava beans.
Yes, saute them with a little bit of olive oil and salt and pepper, and that's all you need.
But take the little skin off.
I always, unlike yourself, Guido, always take the leathery outer hull off of the fava bean, so you have just that very tender, dark green bean, which to me has a very pleasant texture and a great taste.
Yeah, okay. I think the flavor is a lot better without that little hull on it.
Can I steal that one from you?
Absolutely.
I'll cook that this afternoon for that gig.
Yeah, cut it off the cob, cut the corn right off the cob, and your demonstration, put it in the pan, chop up the pepper, throw it in the pan. Saute it. It's wonderful.
Okay, but I'll give you credit for it.
You can tell everybody in San Mateo.
Yeah.
Well, there's kind of a thing among chefs, you know, if you steal my recipe, it's been stole twice.
All right.
No, but I could see the color. Boy, the bright red from the bell pepper, the yellow from the corn, and we're getting some pretty darn decent, actually white corn out of the Coachella Valley, California. And then the green from the fava bean. I could see where that would be very, very pretty and tasty, too. Okay.
Absolutely. B6, folic acid, vitamin C, a lot of good stuff in fava beans.
One of the things I just fixed for a little party for an opening of a new store, we fixed some crostini where we put a little bit of olive oil on toast, a baguette cut up and toasted them, rubbed a little bit of garlic on them when we finished. And then we put a fava bean puree on it, and we put a little tiny piece of blanched asparagus spear on top of that.
Oh, yes.
It was beautiful to look at, and it had a lot of flavors and tastes that are just prevalent this time of year, and we couldn't make enough of them.
Oh, I bet. That's outstanding.
Yeah,
My goodness.
And the thing with fava beans, unlike like string beans or something that you get 12 months out of the year, is fava beans basically are only a springtime gig. You can get a few in the fall, but it is very seasonal, so when you see them, get them and experiment with them.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're the Produce Pair. Pumpkin oil is a big thing right now, especially down in New Zealand. Folks are using a lot of pumpkin oil. In fact, folks are using a lot of alternate oils in cooking now. Avocado oil is making a big comeback, and grapeseed oil, really big. The folks up in Napa are having a great time making grapeseed oil and selling that as another commodity. So a lot of vitamin E there, very good for you. All right, we're the Produce Pair. Just thought I'd throw that shot
well,
in.
Well, thank you, Dan. Our listeners and myself are always grateful for your little bits.
I like Soupy, I like Goofy, I like Charles Nelson Reilly, I like Hee-Haw Fat Albert, and I also like corn. I like corn flakes, corn dogs, I like corn bread and corn starch. I like the bang corn and popcorn, I like all kinds of corn. All kinds of corn!
Okay, that's our friend Brack again, huh?
Speaking of corn, yes.
Good choice, Ken. That's our Ken spinning the wheel over there in the booth. In the vegetable realm, only asparagus and rhubarb can reproduce on their own for several growing seasons. All other vegetables must be replanted every year. However, Roy Creekmore is here with us, and he has pepper plants that
let's talk about this.
They must have been there when he bought the house or something. But
yeah, one of the things you'll find living in the area where we do, which is Zone 17 here in Northern California, it's a very temperate, mild climate, unlike where I grew up in Virginia, where you can get down to zero and below. And I've planted jalapenos, serrano peppers, Colorado chilies, and also Hungarian peppers. And rather than pull them up at the end of the growing season, I left them in the ground. And lo and behold, next spring, they put out leaves and bloomed and peppers again.
Yeah, geez.
So I've got a jalapeno that's going on its fourth summer, and I've got some serranos that are going on their third summer. I try all kinds of peppers, and unfortunately, they all don't make it. Habaneros and Thai chilies are still looking for a much warmer climate. but they will become perennial if you just put them in the ground here and let them grow. And the jalapeno, actually, the stalk is now probably bigger around in my thumb and looks like wood. It's actually gotten so woody and strong, it's no longer green like pepper plants.
Now, that's where I guess the name pepper tree would come from. How tall have these plants become? Any taller, or they got to a certain height and then that's it, but they continue to reproduce?
They're genetically, I think, at their height, they're going to stay. They're about a foot and a half to 2 feet tall,
okay.
And that's about it. The jalapeno is actually a little bigger. It may be 2.5 feet tall, but the serranos, they actually bear so many chilies, they bend over, and I can't tell sometimes how tall they would be because the branches are so heavy with peppers it actually bends the plant over.
Now, if you're in a colder climate, maybe there's two different things to do. One is either put them in a pot that when it gets really cold during the winter, you know, wheel it under like a covered patio or something like that. Or if you're going to have them out in the ground, I wonder if you could trim them before like the first frost and mulch real heavy around, put a, you know, black bucket or something. I wonder if the roots would last. Or this, just a little stem above ground would last.
I've never tried. I know they're a tropical plant, and so therefore they really don't like freezing in any way, shape, or form. And luckily, the past 4 or 5 years, we've not gotten to freezing in Alameda where I live. I think over in the valley, if you ride a Livermore or Concord and Pleasant, you might get freezing. It might not work the same way.
Mm. Well, we had a little bit of a worry this week because there was some forecasting of some freezing temperatures. And it didn't happen. It actually got warm again, which is good because I put my tomatoes in the ground. I put some lemon cucumbers and some Armenian cucumbers in the ground as well. And, of course, I like to plant pumpkins. And the reason I don't wait till the 4th of July to plant pumpkins is you do that in a really hot climate, like out in the valley. And then you'll get your jack-o'-lanterns by Halloween time. But I like the blue pumpkins, so I planted those early. And we'll see what happens. But I was a little worried. This is my first year back in a backyard in a long time.
You sound a little worried, Dan.
I start worrying about them like children, you know. I said, oh, man, I wake up in the middle of the night, I go out with a flashlight and check them. Are you doing okay?
Any slugs?
You know?
Hey, I'm not kidding, though. For the gardeners in the crowd, for slugs and snails, because I too am an organic gardener and I don't use like a chemical slug and snail killer, I would go out there half an hour or so after the sun went down, and I would go out with a flashlight, and I would pluck slugs and snails. And you'd be, especially early in the season, you'd be surprised how much just hand-picking slugs and snails early in the season. You guys are starting to... yeah, I can tell.
Well, I don't know what you do with those slugs and snails afterwards, Guido.
You put them in a bucket
of... Make a pate or what?
You put them in a bucket of salted water.
You put them in a bucket of cornmeal, and after they pass the cornmeal through, then you can eat them.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, there you go.
Oh, nice. Yeah, but hand if you've got... Because you've got a fairly damp backyard, and if you're getting slugs and snails, that's my suggestion. You go out there with a flashlight at night, and pluck them, especially early, and you can knock down that population of slugs and snails.
And if I wet the yard enough, I can get some night crawlers, and I can go fishing, too.
Oh, there you go.
Two birds, one stone.
The best organic control for slugs and snails is to buy yourself a domestic duck and turn him loose in the backyard.
He'll eat every one of them.
Within 2 weeks, you'll have no sight of slugs or snails.
Yeah, and you won't have any friendly neighbors, either.
Thanksgiving, you'll have a duck.
But you have the fattest duck in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And next week, we'll teach you how to cook duck a l'orange.
Hey, speaking of duck, we talked about a little bit about this chicken recipe that you made for the magazine. Why don't we talk a little bit about that chicken recipe?
The proud grandfather, my first granddaughter, Sophia. And
lovely name.
Her father is from Milan, so her full name is Sophia Athena Pianetze.
Holy cow.
A nice mouthful
look
of
consonants. Look how his face lights up when he says that.
I know. He's just like a proud grandpa.
So I went and fixed up a really good chicken dish named Chicken Sophia. In her name, in her honor. So even before she was born, I had the recipe done, so it coincides with... It'll be out in the magazine in a month or so, and she'll be about 2-3 months old then, and it'll be one of our legacies.
Okay. Well, do we have to wait to buy the magazine, or will we be able to talk about it on the other side of the screen?
We'll be more than happy to talk about it.
Oh, good. This is The Produce Pair. I'm Dan, the Produce Man.
And I'm Guido, the Gardener.
Words I say about a thousand times a day. Yeah.
yes. Fresh fruit is what we're all about right here on the Produce Pair. Welcome back. Roy Creekmore joins us here. I'm Dan the Produce Man.
And I'm Guido the Gardener.
And we were talking about Chicken Sophia before we left. And this is a dish that one day is going to be packaged up and sold across the world.
Under the Creekmore label.
Got to buy the Alameda magazine first. But, hey, you're going to get a little preview here.
Yeah, my son-in-law is also a chef. And so it seemed appropriate for a new grandbaby to name a dish after her. It's a very Italian dish. It's very well prepared. I think you'll enjoy it. I would like for you to see the magazine and see the recipe first. I'd rather not give out all the details other than say it's an Italian chicken dish. And I had it tested by all my friends and neighbors in Alameda. And every single one of them said, go for it. It's absolutely going to be something people would like. And so I would appreciate anyone wanting the recipe. They can either, I'll give it to both of you guys. You can put it on the internet after the magazine is out, which should be in about 30 days. You're welcome to share it with everyone.
Great.
Oh, great. Great, fantastic. Great, great.
There we go. So something to look forward to, folks. Let's talk about squash real quick because we've got some great summer squashes here, and we got to thank that warm weather we had last month that really helped push these squashes along.
There's a nice array here. There's, what, five different squashes
there?
Yes,
we do. We have a roly-poly, also known as Rhone Denise. Guido was talking about it last week. Got an Italian zucchini. Now, this is grown by an Armenian farmer, Balakian Farms in Fresno, and anyone with any Mediterranean descent will claim this particular squash, which I have in my hand, which is a white zucchini.
Or a gray squash.
But Armenian zucchini.
Yeah, I know. It does. It's got three or four names.
I like it, yeah.
And really sweet flavor to it. But and then we have a few other varieties that I forgot. I mean, there's a crook neck. There's something that resembles a scallopini and a patty pan, but it's not. It's kind of like a summer squash with a zucchini.
Yeah, it's a dark green round scallop edge squash, but it kind of looks like a scallopini.
She started rattling off all the varieties, and I stopped writing them down. She was going too fast for me.
This one here, the round bright yellow one. This one here, earlier in the year, was coming out of Mexico as a bigger squash, and they were calling it the champagne squash.
Oh, this, okay.
The round, smooth skin, yellow.
It's like the roly-poly or the Rhone Denise or the eight ball, but it's yellow. I like to grill these squashes. I love to brush them with olive oil and grill them and then use them for other recipes throughout the week.
One of the things that I find really great about zucchini squash is that they're so flexible. You can put them on almost anything. I like to take them and slice them into slices about the size of a quarter, and then brush them with a little olive oil, put them in the oven, and bake them until they're nice brown, and then put them in a pasta dish. And they're incredible like that because you caramelize all the sugars, you bring out all the flavors, and you get that coloring and the flavor in a pasta dish that's just really, really nice. When I was growing up, I grew up in the South. On a farm, the only way my mother ever fixed squash, which is still one of my favorite ways, but the only way she ever fixed
it, I hear it sizzling,
was to take butter and onions and squash and saute them together and put them on the table. And very simple and very straightforward. Sometimes she'd sprinkle a little bit of brown sugar on them if they weren't quite sweet enough.
No kidding.
But as a side dish, they were one of the things that we grew up with, and all the vitamins that you get from squash and of course, all the flavor that makes it just a delicious dish was wonderful because we grew them ourselves, and we didn't know organics then. We just stuck it in the ground and, you know, cleaned out the chicken house, and we had organics without even thinking about it.
Right. That's the way.
Now, what temperature and how long would you cook those?
You don't really go by temperature. I put a professional chef usually uses a much higher heat. But at home, just put it on medium heat, put it in a saute pan, and just kind of stir it, or if you're brave enough, flip it like a saute chef would do, until you get the texture you want. Some people like them very tender. Some people like them slightly crunchy. The idea behind what I do is I put the onions in first and cook them because they take just a little bit longer, and I get a nice caramelization on the onions, and then I put the squash in with them. And then I adjust the seasoning either with balsamic vinegar or a little bit of brown sugar, depending on how the flavor is or what I'm serving it with. And you can come out with something and it doesn't matter of the summer squash you put in. You can put in one type or you can mix them all together, and they all turn out really good.
It's different textures and colors. And
they make a great pizza topping, and also they work great in a polenta lasagna. Outstanding,
man. Oh, yeah. Vegetarian lasagna with zucchinis in it. You can't have vegetarian lasagna without zucchinis.
You're right. Hit it real well. Okay, and then, Oh, I'm sorry, Guido. No, go right ahead.
We're, unfortunately, we're starting to run out of time.
No, are we already?
Yeah, look at
it. We're having so much fun.
I know,
here.
It's 57.
Okay. All right, fresh peas. Do you want to say anything about them, Guido? You're grabbing them or you just want to eat them?
Fresh peas, springtime is the best time for fresh garden peas, English peas. And frankly, the best way of finding out if you've got a good one is to taste them.
But just, don't leave the shells laying around the store.
That's right.
Throw them away.
Yeah, ask for
or
a taste.
Eat them like Roy did.
Yeah, I was telling Dan, one of the things you'll find is if you grow on a farm like I did, you learn to eat a lot of things. And I would just pick the peas off the vine, pull the strings out, and eat them right there. And I still do that today.
The garden, the English peas?
Yeah, the English peas. That's what he was doing.
Boy, that's roughage for you.
Hey, we did bring a jackfruit. We'll talk about that next week. Until next week. Oh, I want to thank Roy for joining us today. Thank you, Roy.
Thank you for inviting me. I've enjoyed this.
And
no,
pick up the Alameda magazine.
This is fun.
To read Roy's recipes. Tune in to us next week as well. Till then, I'm Dan the Produce Man saying thank you for a real good time.
And I'm Guido the Gardener. And I will tell you what my Nonna Bessie always told me. Mangia!